Paul's a cop in New York. Paul Bacon. Officer Bacon. No jokes, please. And one night, he did his regular 4-to-midnight shift. And then he was told that they needed him to cover a second shift in another part of the city, in a little security booth, in an area they were protecting from terrorists, basically. At 2 a.m., the other officer who's working in this booth with him takes a lunch break, goes and takes a nap. And then at 3 a.m., it's Paul's turn for a break. He's exhausted. Remember, he had already worked a full shift as a patrolman. And he decides that he's also going to take a nap. So he gets into his patrol car, and he drives it out into this parking lot, a little ways away from the security booth.
I parked my car in the one available spot, thinking, this is a parking lot. Nobody's going to be coming by here. It's going to be fine. And so I turned off the ignition and just sat there, and I realized I don't think I'm going to be able to fall asleep sitting up. So I got out of the driver's seat, gotten back, and closed the door, and I was asleep within seconds. I had set my alarm watch to go off so that I would get up in plenty of time to go back on post so my partner wouldn't worry where I was and everything would be fine, it would be smooth. But I woke up a few seconds before my alarm with this terrible realization, which is that I was locked in the back. I was like, I'm trapped. That was my first thought. Because you don't get out of the back of a police car. The back of the police car is for prisoners.
And, I never really thought about it, that a police car is really just like a rolling jail cell.
That's exactly right. And also, it's hermetically sealed. Remember, it was very cold that night. It was February, and I had closed the grating to the front, and the windows were up, so it was really, you could just feel there was less oxygen in the air. And also, all the windows were all fogged up, so I could barely see out. And I started to panic. I reached for both of the door handles. Neither of them worked. And so I rolled over on my side and I pounded against the door as hard as I could with both my feet. And there's just no way out of this car.
It's dark. It's cold. But he's only 60 feet away from the security booth where his partner is. And he's right next to a sidewalk. All he needs is for somebody to see him, come over, and lift the door handle from the outside. And he gets lucky. A Pepsi truck parks right on the street, right in front of him. He waves frantically at the driver. He pounds on the glass. He can see the driver peering in at him. And then the driver flees. He flees. Who is going to help some maniac trapped in the back of a police car?
My next thought was, well, maybe somebody else will come by. And so I wrote in the steam on the window, I wrote the word help, and I did it backwards. But then I got to thinking, well, that's not going to be any more convincing. So I wrote underneath help, I wrote, I'm a cop. But unfortunately, nobody came by to read my message.
His police radio is in the front seat, out of reach, and 3 a.m, exhausted, panicked, it takes him 25 minutes to remember that he is carrying a cell phone. A cell phone he says he almost never uses. But here's the problem. He's working with an officer that he's never met before, in a place he's never been before. He has no idea what the phone number is of that little booth just 60 feet away from his parked car, that little booth where right now his partner is expecting him back on post, wondering where he is. His first great idea of the night was to take a nap. Now he had a second great idea.
I did what I thought I would never have to do ever in my life, and that is to call 911 as a cop. when the operator came on very shortly, she says, "Well, don't worry, we'll put this through to your central dispatcher," and she was about to get off the phone with me, and I said, "Well, wait, there's this very, very important thing to tell the dispatcher, and that is that this needs to go over the radio as a non-emergency, because any time that a cop requests help, and it's not qualified in any way, it sends out the cavalry. Everybody drops everything they're doing and comes very quickly to that location. And that's a dangerous situation. And all because I made this stupid mistake." So I said, "Please make sure that you specify it's a non-emergency." I swear, within a minute, lights and sirens coming from all directions.
Now, part of the chaos is coming from the fact that Paul wasn't really exactly sure where he was. Remember, this is not his regular precinct, so cops are zooming around just trying to find him. But this seems like way too much commotion, even for that. Something has gone very, very wrong. So Paul dials 911 again. They tell him that his call had gone out as a 1013. 1013. Officer down.
Like as if a cop was being beaten or had just been shot. And that's why everybody was going all over the place. My call had basically woken up the entire midnight squad. You know, probably half that squad was also sleeping. And now I had gotten everybody's blood going. So my partner up in the booth finally got up and started walking down into the parking lot. And I saw him coming and I took my flashlight off my belt and I'm shaking my flashlight. I'm real like crazy just to show him that this is not a headlight of some car. This is a person being very creative and very emphatic about letting you know that this is somebody stuck. And he sees me from about 50 yards away and he takes his flashlight off and jingles it back at me and then starts to walk away. he's just thinking I'm having a good time, you know? Like, yeah, ha, ha. He was walking away, so I had to rap really hard on my window again, and I rapped so hard that I cut my knuckles. But he got the point, and he came down to my car, just lifted the door handle. It took him 2 seconds to let me out.
So he's free, and they call off the cavalry. Nobody in his regular precinct ever found out about it. Today on our radio show, we bring you stories like this one. Stories that begin with a bright idea, like, for instance, you're going to park your car 60 feet from your partner and climb in and take a nap. And then things happen. More than you bargained for. More than you wanted. From WBEZ Chicago, it's This American Life, distributed by Public Radio International. I'm Ira Glass. Each week, we bring you a bunch of stories organized around a single thought. And this week, that thought is, it seemed like a good idea at the time. Our show in four acts today, each of which starts off with great hope and a shiny new idea. Act one, luck of the Irish. In that act, a bunch of people become very convinced that with one simple purchase, they can change their lives forever. Act two, taxation without inebriation. In that act, how to make a decision to hire somebody who absolutely, positively is going to do you no good, and you can tell they're going to do you no good, and why you may never fire that person. Act three, bad morning America. David Rothbart goes into morning television and does a little experiment on his hosts. Act four, the function of the heart. An 11-year-old girl comes up with a simple scheme on how she can finally get to really know her dad who is not so keen on being known. Stay with us.